We asked our film critic Stephen Schiff to look back on the year in film. Stephen is also a critic at large for The New Yorker. Let's start with his top 10 list.
This is a year in which there were a lot of movies that, to me, were very mixed bags. They had, you know, enormous achievements mixed with enormous failures. And that sort of sensibility runs through most of the top 10. I say that because it's necessary to say that to preface the number 10 choice, which is Nixon by Oliver Stone, which in many ways, which has enormous flaws, but enormous strengths as well. And I thought it was a very, very impressive movie on the whole. We're seeing now a very interesting anti-Oliver backlash, I think. In other words, the knee-jerk reaction against Oliver Stone's movies is now being questioned by perhaps an equally knee-jerk questioning of the constant criticism of Oliver just because he's Oliver, which is an interesting phenomenon. But in any case, Nixon was my number 10 film. Number 9 was Burnt by the Sun, the Nikita Mikhalkov film about Russia in the early days of Stalinism. Very beautiful film, which won the Academy Award last year. Number 8 was, I thought, one of the better independent films this year, Exotica by Adam Egoyan, whose films had not previously impressed me. This one was really, really fine and beautifully made. Now I'm going to cheat on number 7 because I wanted to get more on the list. And this was a very good year for children's movies. So I threw 3 into the number 7 category. Babe by Chris Noonan, Toy Story by John Larrabee, and A Little Princess by Alfonso Cuarón. And you could argue that there were a number of other pretty good children's movies. These were exceptional children's movies in a really good year for them. Number 6, Get Shorty, Barry Sonnenfeld's delicious crime comedy of Hollywood. Number 5, a movie that is just opening in New York and Los Angeles, and I don't know how many markets, it'll get wider. Terry Gilliam's new movie, 12 Monkeys, which is a time-traveling sort of fantasy comedy horror movie that's extremely interesting. Number 4, again, I'm cheating. I'm throwing together the Jane Austen movies, Sense and Sensibility, Ang Lee's version from the Emma Thompson screenplay, and Persuasion, the BBC version directed by Roger Mitchell. Number 3, Safe, by Todd Haynes, a very, very fine movie from another surprise for me from a director from whom I hadn't seen much that impressed me, a movie about Anno Mi that had a beautiful look, beautiful performance by Julianne Moore, and a dark undercurrent that was very subversive. Number 2, Leaving Las Vegas, the best fiction film of the year, I thought, and a remarkable story in itself, made for $3.5 million, picked up by MGM for $1 million. Mike Figgis wrote and directed it as a labor of love. It has the two best performances by a man and a woman of the year, I thought, Nicolas Cage and Elizabeth Shue, and was just a very beautiful, romantic, dark, tragic, lovely, moving movie. And the best movie of the year, which had all those qualities and more, was a documentary. It was Terry Zwigoff's documentary, Crumb.
Any runners-up?
Well, there are a lot of, there are a lot of sort of bubbling under movies. I liked Before the Rain, the Milko Manchevski three-part movie that had such an interesting time structure, and another sort of country heard from. The Bridges of Madison County, a very, very fine version of something we thought there could not be a very fine version of. Heat, Michael Mann's very strong and beautifully made crime movie. Clueless, the seeming teen film that was an actual adaptation, another adaptation from Jane Austen, and that was really very brightly funny and made Alicia Silverstone a star. Kiss of Death, Barbe Schroeder's crime movie. Wild Bill, a Western that flopped at the box office, but that I thought was very interesting, by Walter Hill. A movie called Funny Bones that just dropped out of sight, by Peter Chelsom, who did Hear My Song a few years ago. Very interesting comedy. The Usual Suspects, which I thought wound up being overrated, but is still a very interesting crime movie. Unzipped, the terrific documentary about the fashion industry. A couple other independent films, Kicking and Screaming, Noah Baumbach's story of life right after school when you can't quite leave school, and Living in Oblivion, Tom DiCillo's movie about making a movie the hard way.
Stephen, reviewing your 10 best list, there's several films there with dark themes.
Yeah, it's true. This was a year when the grimness got loose, a year of rampant grimness in the movies. In fact, one of the movie's big surprise hits, Seven, was famous for being so grim and dark and difficult to take. And you had 12 Monkeys, you had Copycat, Leaving Las Vegas, Georgia, The Crossing Guard, Dead Man Walking, which is opening just now. I mean, these are downers, and Hollywood wisdom has always been no downers, please. You know, everything has to have a happy ending, even The Scarlet Letter. So this was kind of a surprise, and in some ways I thought it was a pleasant surprise, but again, it has a way of going awry. Seven was, I thought, kind of a stupid movie, and grimness became a stylistic overlay, sort of used to paint it up into something more than it was. It seemed an attempt to make a trivial movie look more significant, and it worked for audiences. And I mean, I'm grateful that it didn't have a happy ending, and I'm grateful that we don't always have to have happy endings anymore. I mean, I think Othello, Richard III, these movies will look very bad with happy endings, and a lot of other movies will too. And if grimness, darkness in and of itself does not turn an audience away, I think that's a good thing. On the other hand, once you sort of turn it into a device like any other or a cliche like any other, then it becomes as empty as any other cliche or device.
I will just say about Seven, like it or not, that Morgan Freeman's performance I thought was quite good.
It was quite good. Yeah. But of course, it's Brad Pitt who's getting the rise from it, and people are saying, well, see, you put Brad Pitt in anything, and he'll make a hit.
Yes,
I think Brad is a candidate for a little award that I have. It's the, for actors only, it's the just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it award. You'll see Brad Pitt in 12 Monkeys giving a twitchy performance, wild performance. Of course, unexpected. It's not a sexy performance. It's not something for teenage girls to dream about. But every scene is full of twitches and tics, and it's true he plays a crazy person in it. But it's overacting of a certain kind, a kind we also saw from another winner of that award. I would think Al Pacino in Heat. Whose philosophy seemed to be, just when you think it should be quiet, I'm going to be loud. And Jennifer Jason Leigh, in a couple movies, but particularly in Georgia, being very drunk and very morose and very, all these are extraordinary actors. They have extraordinary technique. But again, just because they have it doesn't mean it should be employed in scene after scene.
I often look for interesting performances by women at the movies, because there's so few of them. It's so exciting when a good actress finds a really good role. What I mean is that there's so few good roles for women in films now. And one of my favorite performances by an actress this year is in one of your top 10 films, and I'm thinking of Julianne Moore's performance in Safe. And I thought it was really interesting that she gave such an extraordinary performance in Safe, yet in her big commercial film, A 9 Months, the comedy with Hugh Grant, it was such an uninteresting role as written. I don't think there was much you could actually do with it. And I thought, gee, this must say something about the plight of actresses, that there's interesting roles in the independent films, but so few interesting roles in the bigger commercial films.
Well, in some ways, it's not a good year to talk about the plight of actresses, because they had better roles this year than in maybe any year of the last decade or so, and maybe longer. And they really distinguished themselves, and it'll be the first time, sort of for the year-end roundups and whatnot, when people have a hard time choosing among actresses' performances. I agree with you about Julianne Moore. I think she tends to be overlooked, and in a certain way, she's playing her career very shrewdly, because she's giving herself chances to show what she can do, not just in Safe, but last year in Vanya on 42nd Street, I thought she gave the female performance of the year. But then when she's needed to play wifey, she can pull that off too and keep working. And that's the way to sort of get a good portfolio doing. But we had a year of really wonderful performances by actresses. Elizabeth Shue in Leaving Las Vegas, who had played not exactly wifey, but the equivalent of wifey, girlfriendy, babysitter, all that sort of thing, showed herself to be an extraordinary, radiant performer, sort of unexpectedly taking everybody by storm. And I thought that was the female performance of the year. And she it's the whore with a heart of gold role, which is a cliche, and she turned it into something absolutely original, believable. You could believe that this beautiful woman, who in any other movie would be just cast as you know the cutie pie, would need to degrade herself with this man and find redemption in it. I mean, that was acting. Another extraordinary performance was Meryl Streep in The Bridges of Madison County. We're used to amazing things from Meryl Streep, but this was really a very unshowy performance, despite, yes, another accent. It was a very deeply felt performance, and, you know, it was about an ordinary woman, a housewife, and it was such a strong performance that you came away feeling that there was no such thing as an ordinary woman, that there was something to penetrate in almost everyone. So that was a vastly humanizing piece of acting.
Well, Stephen, let's take a short break, and then we'll talk more about 1995 in film. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Back with Fresh Air film critic Stephen Schiff. He's also critic at large for The New Yorker, and we're looking back at the year in film. I remember last year when we talked about 1994 in film, you described how independent film had become like the minor leagues or the farm team for the majors, and the studios were always shopping now at the independent film festivals looking for the next big young director or the big young actor or actress. Has the relationship between independents and the more commercial films shifted at all this year?
I don't really think it has. I mean, I think it still remains the farm team, and it's still, I mean, the Sundance Festival has become this very kind of sleek venue for independent films to filmmakers to show off to the people who will purchase them and turn them into whatever they're going to become. A movie like The Brothers McMullen, which was the most recent Sundance triumph, looked to me like a pure audition film, and I had no particular use for it. And it was packaged by 20th Century as a kind of hot independent product, and it was quite a success as sort of, you know, the emblematic independent product of the year. Look, it's okay. I mean, where is the talent going to come from? And it has to be nurtured, and it has to, I mean, these people have to make a living, and they have to be paid. But I respect those very few filmmakers who try to keep a foot in both worlds. And this includes foreign directors, too. Someone like Stephen Frears, who keeps going back to England after having had a rough time in Hollywood and making the small films that brought him to people's attention and making them very well in a way that he can't make Hollywood films. That's a good program to follow. If you, if you can manage to juggle both kinds of careers, you may really be able to make some good movies.
Last year at this time, everybody was talking about what a genius Quentin Tarantino was, and Pulp Fiction was, you know, on everybody or nearly everybody's top 10 list. How does Quentin Tarantino look this year, and what impact has he had on the movies that are getting produced?
Well, this is again an example of kind of symbiotic relationship, for better or for worse, between the independent world and the Hollywood world. I mean, Pulp Fiction was the biggest independent phenomenon in memory, and Quentin Tarantino became an international superstar. And he was young, and he'd come very suddenly, and probably there were lessons that he should have learned and had not learned. One of them is when people are saying, how did you get to be such a genius? You should demur. Instead of saying, well, I'll tell you how I got to be such a genius. It's very, very interesting. That's probably the kind of thing that will make people sick of you. And I think a lot of people are sick of Quentin Tarantino. I have no reason to believe there's been any diminution of his talent, except that, as we have long known, but as he has yet to find out, he's not the actor he thinks he is. But he may still be a very, very fine writer and director. There's no reason to think otherwise. Four Rooms is an experiment that has already failed and was doomed to fail, as those kind of anthology films are always doomed to fail. And I don't think that's any indication of where Quentin Tarantino is or can go. But he's got to be very careful. This is the kind of corruption that can ruin a talent, and he has a considerable one.
Stephen, what are the films on your 10 best list that are still playing that our listeners might want to see on the New Year's weekend?
Well, I think Leaving Las Vegas is still playing, and that's just a terrific movie.
Certainly in some cities.
Some cities, that's right. Sense and Sensibility has opened very recently and is fanning out around the country and should be pretty easy to find. 12 Monkeys will be opening slowly. I'm not sure when it's going to get into all markets, but watch for it. Toy Story, of course, is one of the great hits of the year and is still playing now. And believe me, it's not just a kid's movie. In fact, you'll like it better than your kids will like it, but they'll like it too. Nixon, of course, is still playing. Heat is still playing. I think Crumb, my favorite movie of the year, is coming out in the not-too-distant future on video.
And I should mention Persuasion, which is on your 10 best list.
Yes, is that still playing?
It's still playing in Philadelphia. Can't vouch for any other city. So, Stephen, what are you looking forward to in 1996?
You know, Terry, this is always a hard question for me, but this year it's easy. I'm looking forward to a movie called Lolita, which is being directed right now by Adrian Lyne, starring Jeremy Irons and Melanie Griffith. Melanie Griffith as Lolita's mother, I should say, not as Lolita. Dominique Swain, a new actress from Malibu High School, whom we discovered for this movie, is playing Lolita in it, and Frank Langella as Quilty, and I wrote it, so I'm very happy about its coming out. I think it should probably be out at the end of the year.
This is the first time you'll have a screenplay produced.
That's true. It's my first screenplay, period.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Stephen, I wish you a very happy new year.
Thanks very much, Terry. Same to you.
Stephen Schiff is Fresh Air film critic and critic at large for The New Yorker. Oh, and I think we scrambled the name of the director of Toy Story. His name is John Lasseter.